This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this episode of, the Thursday Muscle Building Series. We've been excited to launch this program for a while, Project Body. It's not out right now, depending on when you're listening to this, but there is a waitlist. If you guys want to join the waitlist to subscribe to Project Body, which is a program designed for building maximum muscle. The reason we say maximum muscle is because most programs only build a little bit of muscle because the training stimulus, the volume, the frequency, the principles behind it do not maximize for muscle building potential. So I guess if you've been on a program before which is promising a lot of muscle building and has let you down, it's definitely time to try Project Body. So it's out soon. We're launching it soon. If you're already a subscriber to our programs, you will get that program available to you at no extra cost. So if you want to move over and wrap up where you're at with Project Strong, you can move over to Project Body. Last week as well, we also spoke about the basically the 10 biggest myths in muscle building. And we busted them with research, with science, and with our own anecdote after training ourselves and hundreds of our clients as well. And today, Raf, we are doing basically the biggest lessons that you and I have both learned on gaining weight. I feel like the appropriate point to start this is a similar spot to where we started last week with. Just give the folks a little bit of a story as to where you began your muscle building journey and just run us through it really quick, and then I'll run through mine really quick. I'll give you 60 seconds.
Yeah, where I started was, I'm working out, I was 12 or 13. I think 12 years old, I was just under 30 kilos starting high school. I had a lot of muscle building to do. I started playing rugby, and obviously it's not ideal to be less than half the size of everybody else when you're playing. I really looked up. I was like, hey, what are the BMIs of the guys that are the best players at rugby? Worked out how big they were, got a 50 kilo weight set, and got started. Obviously, it took a while. But man, the great thing about changing your body is you actually do see results straight away. It was a complete transformation, really, from the time I started to the time I ended high school.
Yeah, that's awesome. And for me, I started weights, I think I was 16. Yeah, because it was the summer of 2008. This guy wanted to beat the shit out of me. And so that is when I picked up my first weight set. I was always already thinking about it already. Yeah, because the muscle wasn't going to come on fast enough. He did beat the shit out of me, but that's all right. All is forgiven. I was pumping weights with my dad's garage set. Stacking on, no idea what the bar weighed or what the weights weighed. It was just really heavy. Obviously, just doing bench and curls like nonstop. Actually, lat pullovers as well, which is a good one. And then I got my first gym membership, I think around 17 or 18, and just hit Fitness First, just did all kinds of random stuff that I found on the internet. Made heaps of mistakes, been a long journey. And then I think around 2011, I found CrossFit, and then I just went super deep into CrossFit and really only came out of it probably 2015, 16, when kind of the starry-eyed CrossFit Games competitor in me just kind of died off and really returned back to the journey of building muscle. And that wasn't to say that I didn't build a lot of muscle in those years doing CrossFit. It was just a different focus. And now the focus is back to building muscle. Now, there's a lot of lessons along the 11 years, and Raf, even longer for you, 15, 16 years. I think this is a big one for both of us, this first point. So we've got 7 points or 7 lessons that is all about building muscle and gaining weight. So really the first one, I'll let you speak to it first, Raf, is that insecurities first drove us into the gym.
Yeah, and I think, like most people, it drives most people into the gym. And the fascinating about this one is, you look around and you're like, hey, I'm not as big as other people, or I want to be big and strong like other people. And that can be incredibly motivating to get in the gym and work hard. And, if you're looking for a really good motivation, this is one of the best motivations, because what's incredible about this is even as you start to progress and you maybe get where you want it to be or even past where you want it to be, it tends to still continue to drive you into the gym. It's one of those ones that really never goes away. And I think you even look at the biggest, strongest guys that ended up skinny, it still drives them into the gym today, even when they're bigger than everybody else around them. Or they look at, the one other person, I still would like to be as big as that person, or maybe I have got smaller, in the last few months. And your insecurities, I'm not saying they are the best motivation for you to have, but for most people, it's definitely where they start.
Yeah, I think insecurity is good in terms of being a powerful motivator and a powerful driver. I think that when they go unchecked, when they're left unchecked, or people don't really understand the reason that they're doing all this training and all this eating and potentially being antisocial or, you know, losing in other parts of their life for training, I think that's when insecurities need to kind of be reined in a little bit, because they can, even though, you know, you get a positive transformation with how your body looks and you get muscle and you build some confidence and stuff, if you are still very insecure, you can make a massive transformation and still be extremely unhappy. In fact, you might even be more unhappy at the end of it, because you focus in so much on what your body looks like. You constantly stare at your delts. You constantly look at photos of yourself. You never want to take your shirt off because you don't feel like you've developed enough or you've built enough muscle, even though you have. I think you can really kind of ruin your quality of life. So that'd be my only advice is, yeah, insecurities can be good to start with, but left unchecked, I think they can do more harm than good.
Yeah, you want to always be working on them, because you see it show up in some negative ways. And a good example is, you know, maybe you're doing CrossFit, you're doing a sport like that, and you see guys or girls where they're still really concerned with maybe like how their abs look or how they're building muscle. It's actually getting in the way of their training and getting in the way of their sports performance. Like this weird unnecessary thing. The coach is like, okay, cool, we're going to work on this build. They're like, oh yeah, but like obviously can't lose my definition in the lower abs. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep training for a sport. It's like, and you see it, you know, dive in, or even it's stopping you on your muscle gain journey because you don't want to bulk, you don't want to lose weight, or you don't want to cut, or whatever it is. Or you're not following the program because you're doing extra work. So it often can work well at the beginning and then come back to bite you as you get more advanced.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next one, which I think is really important, this is a huge lesson. I think that anyone listening to this that hasn't done this, I would recommend doing it straight away. And that is to measure your protein. When I first started, training and the first thing you learn from a nutrition perspective is you've got to eat more protein. Mm. So that's the first thing you do. But just simply, you know, trying to eat more protein without ever having measured it can be a recipe for disaster. You actually might end up eating less protein. Now, the reason I say you might end up eating less protein is because you don't actually know the weight of protein. So I'll give you an example. When I started, I was like, okay, I need the cheapest protein source possible because I need to eat a lot of it. And what I actually did is I ate less steaks and I started eating more whitefish. So I ended up getting heaps of this whitefish, but whitefish by weight is actually a lot lighter than steak and is less protein dense. And so I was eating all this whitefish, but it wasn't until I measured it, because you know, when you're kind of a young kid, you can't really afford eating heaps of steak every day, or heaps of chicken even for that matter. I went to the frozen food section and just bought like frozen pieces of like a ling fish. And I was actually eating less protein than when I was having chicken and steak, even though I was spending less money. So I think it's just important to make sure that you're measuring your protein. And the best way to do that is just with a scale, a calorie counter and a scale. It's a good place to start. You don't have to do it forever. But I recommend tracking for 1 to 2 weeks, just so you can get a really good kind of eyeball. So when you go out and you eat and you know how much protein you need, you can just kind of eyeball and know how much it sort of weighs. It's just practice, right? It's just tuning in your skills and your senses in the same way that you do it in the gym. Is the same way that you do it with your nutrition. So it's just a learning process. You're just building a skill, which you'll have this tool, you'll use these skills for life.
Exactly. And the good part is it stops you slamming too many protein powders, which is what I did. Because you're like, oh, there's no way I've eaten enough. Like you,
too many Quest bars.
Yeah, and then you just destroy supplements. Supplements are good, but you only need enough to hit your protein quantities. Number three, avoiding pre-workouts as they can suppress appetite.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people listening to this take some sort of pre-workout, whether it's, I think the most common one probably is just black coffee. Mm. But in Fitness First and bodybuilding gyms, it's like C4 and whatever those other things, like Total War and all these crazy supplements. The heart problem attack. With heart attack 101, heart cardiac attacks, arrest.
XXY.
So the reason that we say avoid pre-workouts is because they have so much caffeine, and caffeine is an appetite suppressant. If you're on a muscle building journey, different if you're cutting, you're trying to reduce calorie expenditure, drinking caffeine can actually be an aid because it does suppress your appetite. But having these massive pre-workouts with 400, 500 milligrams of caffeine, you are doing yourself, you're basically setting yourself up for the next like 4 to 5 hours of not really having any proper hunger signals. If you drink that much caffeine, you know for sure. I mean, caffeine metabolism is individualized, but I'd say generally most people that drink that much caffeine probably won't feel like eating much for a good 4 to 5 hours, which really hurts your muscle building journey. You need to be eating, you know, a good meal at least every 3 hours. And if you just, every single time you work out, you just kind of punching a massive hole in your appetite, you're gonna hurt yourself long term. You're not gonna be able to eat enough calories. So avoid, try and drop the pre-workouts. You don't really need them. Or if you do really like it, you just like the ritual of it, you like the taste of it, you like a little bit of energy, try and have a lot less. Try and aim for like 100 milligrams of caffeine. That's like the most I would go for, if muscle building and weight gain is your goal.
Yeah, and I mean a large amount of caffeine is gonna drive up, you know, blood pressure, sympathetic nervous system, which is what, when we had Joel Jameson, the HRV expert, he mentioned as well, is that it's not really going to help the recovery process if you've just destroyed yourself with pre-workout. And whatever you get used to is, you know, usually what you need. So if you get used to having quite a moderate amount, like 100 milligrams in coffee, then it'll be fine. And if you get used to 400, then you're always going to need 400, and it's not going to help you around your session.
Did you actually know, Raph, that you can work out without a pre-workout?
No.
It's crazy.
You have to have a pre if you're going to have a post.
A workout.
It starts the chain. Okay, number four, avoid machines in the beginning. Stick to compound lifts.
Yeah, I like this one because when you look at pro bodybuilders, and that's what most people look at in a muscle building journey, or they look at influencers, a lot of them use machines. And they use machines quite ferociously, like hammer strength machines and chest press machines and like tricep dip machines and all this sort of stuff. And they're great tools and they still work. And I would absolutely use them to this day. But when you're starting out, most people miss the compound lifts. And I think that's because the learning curve to doing a good squat, doing a good deadlift, bench press, strict press, bent over rows, all this sort of stuff, it's just a lot higher, right? It's just anything that's more beneficial just takes more time to learn. And it just has a higher skill adaptation. So machines just kind of look like this. Oh, I can jump on it straight away, load it up, and go really heavy. And that's a huge mistake. Machines should be used as the finishers or kind of the icing on the cake. Once you've already, you know, beat the eggs and added the milk and the whipped cream and you've baked it and you've got a nice plump cake, then you can add the icing at the end. But you've got to do the main stuff first. You've got to do the compound lifts in the beginning. They are your biggest bang for buck. And I don't think anyone's built an amazing physique just on machines.
Yeah, and I mean, more advanced lifters, it's different because they're so advanced and the weights are so heavy on their compound lifts that it can be more stressful, and they're often trying to bring up weak points. When you're earlier on in your journey, you don't really have weak points. Your body is a weak point. Yeah. So you want to master the lifts. And also, you know, once you're in this journey for a while, if you're going to lift for 5, 10 years, you want to know how to do the compound lifts correctly and well. You know, you don't be like a 10-year advanced lifter and be like, oh, I've never really done a squat or a deadlift or a press.
Yeah, and up until recently, maybe someone could argue that, oh, well, I'll just always use machines because my gym has enough machines that it can work out. But, you know, we got kicked out of gyms for a few months and no one had machines. So you had to figure out how to continue to get strong and grow muscle, or at least maintain at the very least, without machines. And, you know, if you know the compound movements, if you know bodyweight training, they don't use any machines and they still get strong and they still grow muscle. So I think it's just a testament to like how unnecessary machines can be, or that they are.
Number five, stop training to be sore, because there is a big difference between adapting and healing.
I like this one. So I'll start with an analogy. It's probably the best way to think about it. Now, it's funny because when I train people, and they show up, you know, the next day or 2 days later or 3 days later or whatever my next session is with them, the first thing I always ask is, are you sore, or were you sore? And it's funny because when people get in a room, they go, oh, that's what Locke always says. He says that to me. Are you sore? How sore were you? And the reason I ask that is because soreness is a perfect gauge of how well did they recover, but also how appropriate was my training stimulus for that person? Like how good was the program? Did I push them too hard? Was there too much volume? Was there not enough volume? And some red flags for me is I was absolutely crippled. I couldn't walk. Mm. I was so sore. I was sore to touch. That is a massive red flag. That is me going, oh shit, I messed up. I gave them way too much training. I trained them too hard. There was too much volume. They weren't ready to do that. I'll tell you what, I'll put my hand up and say I made that mistake a lot. People coming out of lockdown, I thought, oh, we'll just do some empty bar squats and we'll do some bodyweight lunges. It was still too much for a lot of people that hadn't done anything. And now this is why it's bad. When someone is way too sore, you want to think about it like getting a tan. If your goal is to get a tan at the beach, you want to bronze up, and you're starting and you're pale, right? You haven't got much sun. It's been winter. You're coming out, and the sun's blazing. The worst way to go about it is without sunblock to step outside and just go, I'm going to just get the maximum amount of sun today. So you go from sunrise to sunset, full blast at the beach. And what's going to happen is you're going to probably end up in hospital. You've burnt your skin so badly that you have second, third degree burns. You have to go into hospital and heal up, basically. What hasn't happened there is an adaptation process, because the stimulus is too great. There was too much sun. And so what happens is your body peels, it shreds, it heals up, and you're back to being pale again. Like no change whatsoever took place. Now, the adaptation process, which is what you want, is you go into the sun 20 minutes a day at the right time, consistently for days and weeks on end. And over time, you can increase that 20 minutes to 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes. You're slowly adapting. And over time, because you didn't do too much of a stimulus, you hit the right amount of stimulus, you were able to get an amazing tan. And that's the same as with building muscle. If you go too hard, if you put the stimulus is too high and you blow the roof off the thing and you're so sore, you actually went backwards, or you went nowhere. Your body just can't recover from it. So the best thing to do is to just go slightly, like, pull back. If someone walks into the gym, they're like, I actually feel pretty good, I could train again today, it's a little bit stiff or whatever, perfect. Just enough of a training stimulus so that they can come back the next day and do a little bit more. So that is really the point here, is that you need to not focus on judging how good a training session was on how sore you are. It's actually how bad was the training session on how sore you were. If you're very sore, bad training session. You went nowhere. A little bit sore, a little bit stiff, but ready to come back and do some more training today. Perfect. That is a perfect amount of stimulus.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the other side of that is, yeah, if you haven't been sore in months, then you're probably not getting enough stimulus into your body. So it can be a good gauge.
Yeah. And you know, on that as well, is the body gets used to things very quickly. So obviously what makes you sore one time when it's new, you can, like, you know, if you haven't done an incline bench press for ages and you do an incline, you'll get really sore because it's just novel, right? But then the next session, you're not sore at all. And that's just because the body is really good at adapting very quickly. So that's why novelty is an important part of training, to mix it up and stuff, just to make sure that the body is not getting too used to an adaptation as well, so that you don't get any change.
Cool. Number six, enjoy the process. Taking mental breaks is important.
Oh man, when I first got into training, there was a point in 2010, just as I finished high school. As soon as exams were over, the only thing I wanted to do was get jacked. So like I trained nonstop, and actually, it was actually bad for my mental health. I got to the point where, and that wasn't crazy, but I like stopped picking up my phone and hanging out with my friends, and I just played video games and trained because I didn't want to break from my diet. I didn't want to break from my muscle building training routine. And it wasn't until a friend called me once to hang out at his place, and I rocked up with my Tupperware, and he was like, oh dude, it's all good. Because he trained as well. He goes, I cooked us a feed. Like I cooked us heaps of protein and like heaps of bulking food or whatever. But I was so, I guess, obsessed or insecure or just uncertain about the process that even though it was the perfect meal, it just wasn't my meal. And so I refused to eat it. And so I ate my Tupperware instead. So he had cooked these sausages, steaks on the barbecue, potato salad, and I sat there with like white rice and fish and ate it. And his meal, if anything, would have been better because my goal was bulking. It was putting on muscle. And so that's when I started to sort of realize, oh man, I might have a bit of a problem here. Fortunately, I think timing was perfect on this one. I went on a Euro trip for 7 weeks and everything went out the window. Training, like eating, all that sort of stuff. And I think the perspective that gave me really helped to just kind of look, give myself a bird's eye view of like, okay, what am I really doing here? You know, I'm young, I'm 18, 19. Is this really the most important thing in my life? And yeah, I think it just offered, I think, what I needed at the time.
Yeah. And you always come back stronger. You know, like whenever you have a break, you always get, you walk back in pumped up. You don't even realize you weren't that pumped up until you go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So enjoy the process. Take breaks when you feel like it's too much and getting over it. But at the same time, when you do take a break, don't go to zero. Just pull back the intensity. Just do some easier sessions, maybe do some lighter weights. Rather than go five times this week, go two, three times. Maintain, eat a little bit less, go out, socialize. Don't go to zero, but yeah, pull everything back, maybe 50%.
Okay, this one is an interesting one. It's our final one, number 7. It is around your habits and cues, and just be aware of what you are building because they can be very hard to get rid of. Now, the reality is here is that although you may think that you can have a period where you start, you know, eating extra food and changing your eating habits, like when you eat, where you eat, to with the goal of gaining weight, that you'll be able to take this away at the drop of a hat. The reality is it's actually very difficult, and that the habits you start to create when you bulk, because bulking takes time, it's not a 2-week goal, you know, often you're doing this for months on end. The new habits you create are phenomenally sticky, and they can be ones that can be very hard to shake and ones that stick around. So you just need to be aware if they're going to serve you long term or if they're not going to serve you long term.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like you said, the bulking process or gaining muscle is a much longer process than fat loss. Fat loss, people can do fat loss in a shorter period of time because it's a faster process. Burning fat is easier than gaining muscle. You know, if you take out performance enhancing drugs, so you do have to build in a lot of, you know, muscle building bulking habits, which is generally calorie excess. That's like longer sleep and more calories. And I think, you know, subconscious learning is the most powerful learning that you can do. It's the learning that your brain loves. And so some of the ones, if I use my own examples of subconscious learning that were really hard for me to break was petrol stations. So I got into the habit of every time I would drive past certain petrol stations on my way home, I would always stop in and get protein shakes and protein bars.
Well, I remember the time when I first met you, you made me drive to a petrol station to go get your milk, come back so you could drink it during coaching. You're like, I can't get to a petrol station. Can you go to a petrol station? I was like, oh, dude loves petrol stations.
Yeah, so that, and then it became a thing where I found it hard to drive past the petrol station and not go in and buy these extra calories, these protein bars and protein shakes. So much so that one time I literally got out of the car, walked in, had them in my hand, was walking up to the counter and realized, oh, I don't even want this. This isn't part of my goals right now. I already had this sorted out. I've got a new nutrition plan. I put it back and walked out. It must have been a strange thing that the petrol station guy saw, but it made me realize, wow, there's so much subconscious learning that happens here that you've got to be so careful of. And I think the one most people can relate to in the muscle building journey is probably the late night snacking. It's probably like the biggest one, right? You finish dinner, you've eaten all your calories for the day, you're all satisfied, you sit down to watch Netflix, and then like literally you are in the fridge looking for something to eat. And if you've got chocolate there, if you've got ice cream, if you've got, I don't know, protein cookies or whatever, like it's gone. Like forget about it. You've absolutely smashed it. And it's okay. When muscle building is your, you know, is your goal, having a little bit of excess calories is fine, but that can be a really hard habit to kick, really hard. And when you don't want to gain any more weight, when you want to, you know, stay a bit leaner and stuff, I mean, every night you're probably going to sit down and watch Netflix, or 99% of nights. And if you've got that habit of going over to the fridge and eating snacks, it's going to be a hard one to kick. So it's something definitely to keep in check. Personally, I would recommend just never doing it under any circumstances and getting your calories in, all your calories in, like dinner being the cutoff.
Yeah, 100%. If you get in the habit of having a dessert, which works really well for muscle building, like an extra snack at the end of the day, be aware that if you do that for months on end, it's probably going to stick with you for close to life. You know, there's a reason like every fat person in America has dessert, because they get in the habit of it when they're young, and then you finish dinner, no matter how full you are, you feel like, you know, there's a different mouth sensation that you need to finish off your day. And it'll stick with you. And the reality is as well is that if you eat healthy and then you start mixing in, you know, some sweeter stuff and stuff like that, that, you know, is hyper palatable, that is going to help you bulk. It's going to make healthy food not taste as good in the long run as well. So all of a sudden, the same diet that you were on 6 months ago, you try and go back to it, is going to suck. You know, it's going to be worse. So just be aware that you can't just take on all these kind of just poor food habits for long term that, yes, might support you in the short term and think they won't have long term consequences. And all you have to look at is just like ex-athletes. How many ex-athletes are fat? You know, so many of them. And it's just because, they got into all these crazy bad food habits that served them while they were exercising all day. And then when they stopped, even these guys that are crazy disciplined or girls that are, you know, at the top of really willpower and self-discipline, they still struggle when they finish.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great point to leave it on, a great point to wrap up. So I'll run through them again. Our biggest lessons on building muscle, gaining weight. Number one, insecurities will drive you into the gym. Number two is to measure your protein. Three, avoid excessive caffeine from pre-workouts. Number four is avoid machines in the beginning and stick to compound lifts. Number five is don't train to be really sore. Think about adapting, not healing. Number six is enjoy the process, take mental breaks. And number seven is to check your habits and subconscious cues. They can be hard to get rid of. So guys, there's some valuable stuff in there, hopefully for anyone. Remember, this whole muscle building journey, bulking, gaining weight, whatever you want to call it, is a three-step process. Number one is the stimulus. Number two is the fueling, and number three is the growth. And step one, stimulus, is training, and you've got to get training right. It's the first step in the process, and so many people get it wrong. So many people get it okay in the short term, but long term they get it wrong. And great programs always win in the long term. That's really the difference between good programs, short term and long term. Everyone can do a day's worth of programming. Everyone can program a week for themselves, but not many people can program success for themselves for months and months on end. So that was part of the reason we wanted to create Project Body, is to provide one of the best muscle building, best bodybuilding programs on the market. And that's what we've done. If you guys are interested in checking that out, you can go to themindmuscleproject.com/body. It'll be out in 2 weeks. So the launch of the product as of the releasing of this podcast, it'll be out in 2 weeks. So join the wait list so you don't miss out and you get notified. And yeah, if you're already a subscriber to the project programs, thank you. And yeah, that will become available to you as well for no extra charge. And you can jump onto that. All you need to do is just make the switch. Guys, thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed this muscle building episode, and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.